This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Terry McMillan has a new novel. Her previous novel, Waiting to Exhale, is a tough act to follow. The book sold close to 4 million copies. And the film adaptation, which McMillan co-wrote, was a box office and cultural phenomenon. The story is about four women friends searching mostly in vain for the right man. The main character of McMillan's new novel, How Stella Got Her Groove Back, is a 42-year-old divorced single mother who is on the verge of giving up hope of ever feeling any excitement or passion toward a man until she takes a vacation in Jamaica, a vacation she can easily afford. She's an analyst for one of the world's largest investment banks. On her Jamaican vacation, Stella meets a 21-year-old man named Winston, who makes her feel all those things she never expected to feel again. But being twice his age, she doesn't trust her feelings or his. This is the scene shortly after they meet, and he's made it clear he's attracted to her.
Let me ask you something. What's the oldest woman you've ever been with, Winston? 24. And I say, well, you'd have to turn those numbers around for me, sweetie. And he says, so? And I see he is somber. I mean, there is like this, what is the problem look on his face and in his eyes. And I say, wait a minute, let me get this straight. And he is smiling deeply at me again as if he knows what I'm about to say. And even I don't know what I'm about to say. But he is clearly ready to respond. And I take the first of a series of hyperventilated breaths and force out, are you saying you would like to sleep with me, Winston? And I look at him to see his reaction to that one, and without blinking, he says, absolutely. And he gives me a don't look so surprised look, and out of the corner of my eye, I glimpse the old man watching us. Winston pushes his right hand under the surface of the water, and I can feel his long fingers barely graze my waist. And when I look into his eyes this time, my body quivers and shudders, and I can't believe it when I hear myself say, okay. He is grinning fiercely and blushing at the same time, and he says, really? And I look at him and say, really? You won't change your mind like last night, will you? I don't think so, Winston, but I'll tell you something. I don't know what I'm doing, and I can't believe what I just said to you. I mean, there's something illegal about this, isn't there? He is giving me a very comforting look. There is nothing illegal about this, and I don't understand what would make you say something like that. Winston, I sigh. What? He sighs back, and he truly does look clueless. I'm old enough to be your mother, but you're not my mother. I know that. You don't look like my mother, you don't act like my mother, and you certainly don't feel like my mother, he says. I must admit, he is rather convincing, but this is totally scandalous, Stella, and you know it.
Terry McMillan, what's the inspiration for this novel?
Oh, I went to Jamaica. I'll put it this way. I went to Jamaica last summer, because 2 years prior to that, my mother died unexpectedly at my home when I was in Rome touring for Waiting to Exhale. Then a year to the day later, my best girlfriend, Doris Jean Austin, died. And I hadn't really experienced that kind of loss before, if ever. And I didn't know how long this grieving process lasted. All I knew is that I was not feeling very good and I wasn't able to write. And so I decided last June to go to just do something ridiculous or something spontaneous. And my sister was going to go to Jamaica in October. And when she was explaining to me where she was going to stay, I said, you know what, I should just do that. And I did it. And when I got there, you know, it was sort of like the first time I'd ever done anything for myself, well, in a long time, with no guilt, and where it wasn't writing-related, where I've traveled. And something really beautiful happened to me there, and I came home, and I started feeling like my old self again, almost before my mom and my best girlfriend had died, because I was feeling different. I was sad all the time. Not depressed, but just sad, you know, because I missed them. And I sort of got rejuvenated down there, and I didn't quite understand it. I mean, my boyfriend's name is Jonathan, and he's young. He's not as young as Winston, but he's young. And he's only partially responsible for it. It was almost as if I felt like my mother and Doris sort of visited me on the beach or something and said, look, it's okay, we know you miss us, but you got to get on with your life, honey. And so that's sort of what the inspiration was. It's about healing and about taking risk and, giving yourself permission to feel good.
So you felt that somehow you felt the presence of the people who you'd lost with you in Jamaica, and they were giving you permission to continue living and encouraging you to take chances again. Was one of the chances allowing yourself to have a relationship with somebody much younger than you? Did you think of that as a big chance, as a big risk?
No, because when I was in Jamaica, I had no intention or didn't even think about the fact that Jonathan and I would end up ultimately having a relationship. It was just something fun to do. So when I left Jamaica and came home, it wasn't with the thought that I'd ever see him again. It wasn't, not at all. But I was a different person. I just felt, you know, emotionally mobile again when I left Jamaica. And like I said, it was just, you know, exercising, being on the beach, eating good food, reading, you know, not having the phone ring, no fax machines, nobody bugging me for autographs, even though some of the people that worked there did. But it wasn't the same. And I sort of felt removed in a way, and yet very, very present. It was sort of like I was able to step outside of my own world and observe it in a way. But I didn't do that again until I got home. That's what sort of inspired the book. It was sort of like, gee whiz, what happened to me down there? You know, because I came back and my sisters all said, Terry, you look different. You know, I mean, I was laughing. Not to say that I hadn't laughed in 2 years, but it was different. And I didn't quite understand it, you know, and I wanted to.
Stella, the main character in your novel, says that the idea of seeing a man in his 20s when she was 42 seemed scandalous to her. Did that idea seem scandalous to you?
Oh, yeah, I didn't take Jonathan seriously at all because it was, well, not scandalous, that's just a term I use. I didn't quite feel like that. I think a little risque. Well, maybe scandalous might be appropriate. I don't know. But, you know, he never saw it that way. Not at all. But, I mean, the bottom line is that I ultimately had to question all of it. And that, too, is what made what was part of the inspiration behind the book. You know, I started thinking, gee whiz, you know, if I was a guy and I was 42 and I was going out with, you know, a woman in her 20s, nobody would think twice about it. It would make a boring book, really. I mean, men do it all the time. All the time. And well, nobody thinks twice about it.
Well, in fact, I mean, men do it all the time, and often women really resent it. Like if a woman in her 40s has seen or is seeing a man who's in his 40s then or 50s, then he leaves for somebody in her 20s. I mean, women kind of resent that, and I wonder if you see it differently now that you're involved with somebody who's in his 20s.
Well, I've never really actually, first of all, I've never been in a position like that, but I wouldn't say, I mean, I think a lot of men go through midlife crises, to be very honest with you, where they're questioning and wondering about their own sexuality, their own masculinity. And I think to some extent, and they want to know that they're still appealing and all that. That's why I think a lot of them go that way. But you rarely will see a poor 40 or 50 year old man with a 20 year old. They almost always have to have money and something else going for them, believe me. And I think the beauty for me here was that Jonathan didn't know who I was. He didn't have a clue. And it was so refreshing. Mm-hmm. God, it was refreshing. That was another thing that, you know, to meet somebody who didn't know who you were. It was nice. I didn't care how old he was, to be honest with you.
Are there preconceptions that you've come up against about why a woman would see a much younger man?
Well, you know, the news is just, I mean, I'm just starting to make this public, but, you know, I mean, I don't have much choice. I mean, Jonathan is here. He's not going anywhere, I don't think, anytime soon. And everybody knows I've written a book. He's Jamaican. Yes, yes, yes. I don't know. I really don't care, you know, to be honest with you. They're going to say what they want to say, but I don't think I've been this happy in centuries.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad.
So I'm not advocating younger men, but all I can say is this one's working for me.
Terry, there's a scene I'd like you to read from the beginning of your new novel, How Stella Got Her Groove Back. This is early on, before all the changes in her life have happened, and she's thinking about all the phone messages she gets, and this is the section about those phone messages.
I know I'm not alone because I'm forever getting messages from estranged friends and relatives who are pissed because I haven't returned their phone calls for whenever. And they say things like, girl, I could be dead and you wouldn't know it. What kind of friend are you, Stella? We used to be close. Did I do something that I don't know about? And I shake my head no. Or they say, we just had a baby, or I finally got my divorce, and I just wanted you to know that I don't live in Atlanta or Memphis or Los Angeles anymore. And oh, by the way, I got a brand new grandbaby. And did you get the pictures? If you didn't, you didn't say nothing about how cute he is. And hell, he got 3 teeth now. Or he walking, or he's in kindergarten. And this is the MCI operator with a collect call from Benny. Please press 1 if you accept and 2 if you decline. And sir, the party's not at home. And he says, okay, but can I leave a message anyway? And then there's a click, and he is just one of my many relatives who call from the penitentiary. But then there's like, hey, yeah, Stella, this is your cousin Rafiki. Assalamu alaikum, my sister. Peace be unto you. All praises are due to Allah. And hey, I know you surprised I ain't calling collect, but my lady let me use her calling card for a month, and you still ain't send me no pictures of you. And I'm still working on my own defense, and I was wondering if you could send me $50 for some toiletries and such, because my mom ain't been up to see me in over 6 months. She mad at me, and my lady ain't got no more transport to get way out here, and I've been in the hole for the past month or something, for I ain't even dead. But it's all good. And anyway, let me know if you can do that. And baby, this is your Aunt Junie calling, and I don't know if you know it or not, but Miss Willa Mae in the hospital, and I know you remember her because she used to babysit you when you was a baby, and you know she got cataracts, and she had to have that operation finally that she been putting out because of having all them insurance problems and everything, but you remember her? She Miss Bessie's cousin, sister of what married her first cousin, Silver, what used to live around the corner of Moke and 40th Street, right down the street from Miss Lucy when she was living. Anyway, you went to school with her granddaughter, but I can't remember her name right now, but pray for her. Even though she doing much better now. And I just want to touch base. Don't get to talk to you much no more. And how is Quincy these days? I bet he's tall as you. And how old is he now? There is a long pause because she is waiting for an answer. And like a fool, I say, he's 11 and a half, Aunt Junie. But even though you don't stay in touch, girl, I want you to know that you both are all in my prayers. And the Lord is watching over you. And I'm going to call your sisters as soon as I hang up since the rates is low. Love you, baby. I wonder if her machine is going to get all this. Stella, did you get this whole mess of sugar?
That's a great scene.
Thank you.
Is that a lot like your answering machine?
Not quite. I don't really have any aunts that call me like that. But when I was little, I had aunts like that I remembered.
That's Terry McMillan. She's the author of the new book, How Stella Got Her Groove Back. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Terry McMillan. Her new novel, How Stella Got Her Groove Back, is her first book since the very popular Waiting to Exhale. At the beginning of the novel, before Stella goes to Jamaica, she's, you know, thinking about relationships and being single for a long time. And she says she's basically given up on marriage. She says, marriage wears you out, and I'm not sure if I have the energy left for it. All my married friends are mostly miserable. They're just in it because they started it, those kids. I've pretty much come to the conclusion that marriage itself is a dead-end institution. Is that your conclusion, too?
Sometimes. Sometimes. I mean, I've never been married. And I think because my mom was married 5 times, and I never really thought about it before, but, I mean, I've been proposed to 6 times, and each time I said no, because I knew it wasn't going to last. And I think I was just really scared. And plus, they probably wouldn't have lasted. I don't know. I know some people that are happy, but I know more that aren't.
You've been criticized for making most of the men in Waiting to Exhale unlikable. And I'm wondering if you ever thought that it made the women seem foolish for choosing them in the first place.
That was the whole point.
Uh-huh.
That was the point. It wasn't to make the men look bad. It was to make the women realize that, gee whiz, look at what you've chosen. So, you know, don't blame the men. Look at yourselves. That's the whole. A lot of people miss that whole point. All they think about, I mean, the men are like, oh, why are you always male bashing and dogging us out? You know, I chose 5 men deliberately that you shouldn't be thinking about bringing home to mama. I mean, it was deliberate. That's why the movie was called Waiting to Exhale. None of these men were worth exhaling over. Well, a couple of them, you know. And, of course, nobody pays any attention to them. But it was more about, you know, women who choose men, you know, you choose somebody who belongs to somebody else's husband you fall in love with. Well, what do you think he's going to do? How many of them actually leave their wives? Very few of them. You know, you choose somebody who you... Plus, I made Robin's, one of the guys Robin goes out with, a drug addict, because women are always thinking they're their saviors. They think our love and what we do have between our legs is going to solve everybody's problem. Men, that we can save them. We can rehabilitate them. And we can't. You know, so that was the point. Those were the issues I was trying to deal with, not the fact that all men are dogs, because they aren't. Everybody knows that. Stupid people even should know that.
Did you get surprised reactions for having a male co-writer for the screenplay and a male director?
And a Jewish one at that, huh? Yeah, not really. I mean, if people have said anything, they've sort of kept it to themselves. I think more of Forrest than anything. People ask me, you know, like, why'd you choose this white writer? You know? And I said, because he was good at what he did. You know? And Ron Bass is really smart. I mean, he's real intuitive in terms of understanding human emotion, and there's no color on that. And he's proven it before in things that he's written. From Joy Luck Club, he's been Chinese, you know. he's been a savant or whatever, with Rain Man, etc. And he's just really smart. And I have a lot of respect for Ron, and I couldn't have written a screenplay without him, to be honest with you. He's going to help me write Stella, too.
For the movie?
Yeah, if there's going to be a movie, yeah, I guess. He basically does the structuring. That's what he's good at. He knows how to take a book and structure it so that it works as a film. I don't know how to do that. I mean, I read a book about it, but let me tell you, honey, I got migraines. He knows how to do that. But people gave me flack about Forrest. But my attitude was, you know, I thought it was kind of a nice twist, to be honest with you, that they thought I was dogging out a man and we got one to direct. But Forrest did the same thing. He understood what these women's problems were. He even said, you know, their problem is they have a very low sense of self-worth. You know, they don't even they don't value themselves enough, and that's why they're choosing these creeps for boyfriends. And I was like, hallelujah. You know?
The success of the novel and of the film Waiting to Exhale was almost like a phenomenon. All the people going to see Exhale a second time, a third time, going in groups. What does the success of Waiting to Exhale say to you, aside from the fact that people obviously like your writing and your stories, but what does it say to you about what people want now?
What
gap it was filling?
I think people in general, and black people in particular, just want to be properly or accurately portrayed. I think that we are always rendered in such a way that we are always downtrodden, that, you know, everybody's a crackhead or a gangbanger, you know, that we are always victimized, you know, and everything is tragic. You know, and in most black communities, there's not a whole lot of tragedy at all times, you know. Even in the projects, you know, people don't get killed walking home. I know people who lived in the projects for 20 years, and they're still alive and kicking. Friends, family, everybody lives there, sit out on the bench, drink a beer. You know, there are other aspects of our lives that I think have gone unrecognized. I think also, you know, people don't understand that you can write with humor and still be serious. Ring Lardner did it. J.D. Salinger does it. A lot of people do it. Satirists, in some cases, do it. And I think that's how I see my work. That's how I saw the film. And I've been sort of criticized because, you know, I guess it wasn't this statement that I was making about the affairs or the status of African-American women and men. And I think to some extent, not to say that we shouldn't take a lot of the issues to heart nowadays that are affecting us all, but at the same time, we also have to know when to lighten up and relax and enjoy ourselves and still take what our lives seriously and the political ramifications of everything that's happening around us and how it affects our lives. But you have to know how to separate them. I think that's what the 90s are about for me.
Was it hard for you to write your new book because Exhale has been such a huge success? You know, how can you possibly follow that up? The expectations are so high.
Well, first of all, I was writing a different book, and it was called A Day Late and a Dollar Short, that I had written like 140 pages a couple years ago. And then when my mom died, I just went zip. I just didn't have anything in me. I just didn't. And that was another reason why when I went to Jamaica, I mean, I wasn't thinking about, gee whiz, how am I going to follow up Waiting to Exhale? Because first of all, there's always a backlash to when you have a success like this. First the book, and then when the movie hit, I was like, oh, wow, they're going to destroy me. But fortunately, I had already written Stella. I mean, when I got back from Jamaica, like I said, I first of all, I'd quit smoking, and I never thought I'd be able to write without a cigarette. Well, I wrote Stella in a month. The first draft of it, and I just started writing, and I couldn't believe that I was writing, and I was like so happy that, you know, I was writing again, and I was like thanking my mother, thanking God, thanking Jonathan, everybody who ever helped me, quote unquote, get my groove back. I don't know where it came from. I don't really care, to be honest with you, but I just said thank you.
Are you going to go back to the novel you were working on before you
definitely.
Wrote Stella?
Yep, I'm stronger emotionally now, and it's like I have accepted the fact that my mother is gone, that my best girlfriend is gone, that I'm not going to see them again, that they are okay, and that I'm okay. And it has taken me a long time to even be able to say that. So, yeah, I can go back and do it now.
Terry McMillan, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Terry McMillan's new novel is called How Stella Got Her Groove Back. She co-wrote the screen adaptation of her novel Waiting to Exhale. It just came out on video. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.